started out, you know, some people would say, you know, they just kind of go on and just like ignore it. And then some people would be really serious and concerned. Serious and concerned, you get lots of points.
Yeah.
And then you're like, Matt, you've heard it once, and you just dismiss it the second time, you lose all your points.
And at this point, I think I've heard it at least more than a dozen times.
I think you're getting into negative points.
When are we going to get a new water team?
Now, you know what? That's a good question. It hasn't been on our radar. We can bring it up and discuss it.
Hi, Tom.
Hey, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing well.
I mean, Richard, you know, water's hard to come to.
Water is what?
How are you, Dave?
Good, how are you?
Well, thank you. Glad today it's not snowing.
Yeah, me too. Last week was quite interesting.
Papa John's. Yes, the whole menu.
I can't possibly eat all that. Even if you forced it down.
Yeah, but how are you,
Carl? I'm doing well. How are you?
I am fantastic. Yes. Actually, earlier Charlie emailed me asking and saying he'll be late. That's what's going on between 5 and 6, and I'll tell him, well,
I don't think he'll be.
Why is Mitch replied to us?
We have a couple of handouts. Should I just put them up there?
That'd be great. Unless you want to pass them out later, so you're prerogative.
I can just put them.
Okay. Also, Rena, you should know the essay had a report from Annabelle's talking about their financial policy.
I told Cassandra about this. And she already met with the person.
Yeah, I can be honest, like, they're not giving the money from us this year. It's not it. They're not operating.
According to the agenda, this is. Oh.
Let me see. Did she tell you this?
No. Cassandra, James is very interested in working with them and possibly defunding them, but. That may or may not be my influence. Thank you. I thought this was a USB presentation for a second. I thought this was like, oh, this is a USB drive. I said, no, it's. Is it a whistle?
It's a whistle. It's a compass. It's a light.
Keychain.
And it's a keychain.
This is neat. Thank you.
Sure.
There's something. That we're supposed to read.
I was going to hand them out, but I said, thanks for coming over.
Charlie.
Pass them up to your colleagues here.
Okay. Hey, six more people for four.
Okay, she said that Michael and her agreed that they will push back the $20,000 donation to the fall 2019.
I mean, that's just they're losing 1 year, but yeah, so that's assuming they're operational and they're fiscally, because James is not, like, I talked to James about it, and he's like, I don't know. His thing was like, clearly they're not getting enough shoppers. Clearly there's no grad students going there.
This is just an emergency.
This advertising is horrible.
No, it doesn't shoot anything, it just. Whatever it does, it'll work out.
Perfect. Then we'll work with my better. How are you?
Good, how are you, man?
I am fantastic.
You ready for tomorrow?
Hmm?
Are you ready for tomorrow?
What's tomorrow?
Whoa. CJC?
Oh, okay. I thought you were trying to Jarrell.
No, no.
That's what I get to look at my phone.
Jarrell does not have to clerk.
Charlie, how are you?
Good, Dad. How are you?
I am fantastic. Also, Dylan should know, I met with Madeline Wessel this morning. We're good things.
Okay.
Good to see you, Charlie.
Nice to see you. I hope all goes well.
All is very well.
Well, that's better than the alternative.
That is always better than the alternative. If you look for someone who's not going well, I'd be happy to point to the direction of Richard.
Ah.
He's terrible, unfortunately. Also, Charlie and Linda, you should feel free to join us at the table.
It's a random
Oh, thank you so much. I actually today had a late lunch. You know, I think.
Well, perhaps dessert, but it's your choice.
Should I get water?
I should warn you, that is perhaps one of the world's slowest water dispensers.
See, we didn't really order it from there anymore, so.
Yeah. Budget for them.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Do you like this? Is this a better spray?
Yes. So, do I have your Pinox on?
I only eat pizza when somebody else orders. For 100 semester.
Well, we definitely have corn.
Very busy.
So that is a very good question.
So remember, this was specifically the day we did not schedule next week's meeting, too.
Yeah. Thing is, we, again,
I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah, fine. About my city of, mm-hmm.
Oh, boy.
Where would you go?
So, Gina managed to... Marty's invitation for his calendar said 4 o'clock, so apparently people were here at 4 o'clock and then left. Logan, how are you?
Good. How about yourself?
I'm good. How's your break and semester going so far?
It's good, except I've got a night class.
Oh, which one?
I'm taking biz orgs.
Oh, with whom?
Grimito Ricci.
Okay, I took.
He's
one
visiting.
Point. Okay.
But so my Tuesday and Wednesday, I'm in class from 6 until 7:30. That's painful.
Fair, I have my Monday class from 7:30 till 10, so it's late, but it works.
Jeez.
My last
set. I won't really have a chance.
It'll be 17 years.
Of course, you can. You can course correct.
Kathy Zoner was on the CDC for over 17 years.
Wow.
That's the president resolution.
Gina had Carell go through all of their documents on their servers and all of the physical books to try and see when she started service on the committee.
Yeah. It did keep a record of that, but I wanted to mention it because I know she's been around for a long time. 12 years is crazy. 17 years is a very long time. You are after we start the meeting.
Thank you so much.
We have flexibility. So today, in essence, we're doing Kathy Zoner's hop in thanking her for her service.
Yeah, that's
so we have that. Actually, you already agree with that from the. We're only passing that. We passed last week. We were canceled because of the snow. So. Really, where there's no hard
Okay.
Time. So, thank you.
It's a lot of meetings.
Yeah.
Very busy. How do you talk?
Ah. And I won't be able to get me.
You're so mercy. Did you get
Varun's
on Zoom?
Oh.
Oh, Varun's video is on Zoom. I'm sorry.
You can't make it?
Not in person.
I might have said, am I wrong?
That brings us to 7.
It's confidential.
5, 6, 8.
We'll share that.
I also got the 4 o'clock invite.
That was the California system. everybody's.
The agenda did say 4:30, though.
But the UA, yeah.
A good idea. So, you're in the department, see how you. Judge, decision. The bad thing is that there's a lot of just waste, lost. But.
Yeah, I.
There's pressures.
Yeah.
Lonnie, how are you?
Hey, what are you doing? Giving things away? Was that you? That's not you. Oh, I just plugged them.
Yes, thank you.
I should have given you a heads up.
No, there's no need.
You're welcome.
All right, thanks.
Please feel free to get some food.
All
right. We're hearing from Amazon, and then we're going to turn right to.
All right.
If you, awesome. If you have time, we can switch it up. But.
No, I'm good.
Yeah, anything's fine. Totally.
Yeah, we're good too.
Thank you.
I'm here for you.
Sun's
up my eyes.
We're here to thank you. So.
All right. Thanks.
Long time no see.
I'm so sorry.
Traveling.
That's all right. You had.
How's
that?
Awesome. Yes.
You need a hug.
I do.
Besides.
Right. It's huge hotels. Unbelievable.
I just pack them in.
I
was at the festivities, and so many other people were there. So.
Yeah.
But if I could give you a
yes, absolutely.
I'm in the midst of drafting an email, but you know, when you think so highly of someone, it's hard to write an email because you're like,
Well, the good news is, I'm not leaving town.
Right.
That is great.
So
that is great.
Town. It's always time to catch up.
Yeah.
Well, on my end, maybe. So you know what traveling is. So.
Oh, good. Hey, did you get my note?
Yeah, I just
okay.
We'll
work it out.
Cool.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That's
what I was going to ask you.
So many do.
Code of conduct assemblies.
CGC. I'm probably going to be there at CGC Wednesday.
Okay.
Your superior will be notified.
Yes.
Actually, there's a resolution.
It gives you. That's right. You're out. It gives you time to figure out what to do with that too. So.
Actually, no. I know. I'm knowing Dave, sometimes just sit down and talk to us about making sure everything goes through. I know. Just make sure.
And we did talk about some. Scott Grant has done a lot of work.
Yes.
With the community.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. He's on vacation right now. So. It's, you know, that's his problem. He goes on vacation. He's volunteered or stuff.
Well, I prefer voluntold.
Yes. That is definitely how it works.
Fantastic. We're going to start in a minute.
Great.
Welcome. Please welcome to
Okay.
It's Papa John. So.
That's true. I have to remember Papa John's.
That's it. My grandparents and my cousins-in-law own pizzerias. So Papa John's is, well,
so many of
sauce and bread. It's edible.
Asked.
And that's what the nice things I'll say about the blend.
Right.
But I can't complain too much.
How are you?
So,
peachy. Just peachy.
We're going to go in. So.
Yeah.
It is also very sweet.
Benson, you're a short timer.
The Papa John's.
I am.
I really think it's for you to decide whether or not pizza is supposed to be sweet.
I realize exactly.
That's not usually the go-to for you.
No, I wouldn't.
No.
I'm just worried about what they can find.
Yeah. Well, these days you have to worry about those things.
Exactly.
Nice.
It's a lot of careful shredding. I mean,
hey, they may find your high school annual.
I have found some performance reviews I'm not particularly proud of.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Yes, true.
We're going to get started. The time is currently 4:36. There is actually a campus infrastructure committee meeting that's going on concurrently with ours, so a few people will be joining us a few moments late. However, I want to take a moment to start this meeting and also welcome the ombudsman. So we have Charlie Walcott and Linda Fulkson joining us, as well as Chief of Police Kathy Zoner. We're happy to host you today, and we're looking forward to hearing from you both. First on our agenda would be any late additions. Is there anyone with anything to add to our agenda? Hearing none, we'll move on to approval of minutes. Being that we currently are too short of a quorum, we'll come back to that once the rest of our members arrive, which then takes us directly into our next agenda item, which is the presentation and update of the University Ombudsman. So Charlie, Linda, you're free to join us at the table if you'd like, instead of hiding off the side.
I'm gonna go get my seat on the lecture.
Is this a good spot?
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Matthew, for having us. And I recognize a certain number of people around the table, but there are always some new. So let me just quickly review what the Ombudsman's Office is and what it is that we try to do in general terms before Linda tells us about the specifics and a number of things that are changing. First off, you have two-thirds of the office here. The only person not here is Helen Lang, who helps us by arranging appointments and keeping us all organized and aimed in the right direction. Basically, we've been around since the small difficulties in Willard Strait in 1969, so we're close to 50 years old. And our basic function in life is to try and be helpful and supportive of people who have issues of one sort or another, which may be serious or they may be somewhat less serious, but they're our main job in life really is to help them figure out what to do. Cornell is a complicated place. There are offices for almost anything you can imagine. And between Linda and I, we have at least figured out where the majority of these things are, so that when somebody comes in with a problem, we can try and be helpful and supportive. We both belong to the Professional Association, the International Ombudsman Association, and we follow their basic code of ethics, which is confidentiality, meaning that nothing that anybody tells us is ever revealed, including their identity, except under a couple of circumstances. We're informal, which means we don't participate in formal processes. We're neutral, which means that we don't take sides in arguments, which occasionally we get embroiled. And finally, and most importantly, we're independent. That is to say, we are not part of human resources, or we are not part of the academic side. We're totally free-floating and reporting to you folks. So you are our bosses, and that is why we're here. To report to you and to get your counsel and advice on what we should be doing that we're not doing. Basically, as I say, our job is to assist visitors, and it often amounts to analyzing options. People come to us with an issue, and we say, well, you know, you could do this, and if you did that, this might happen, or you could go here and go at it this way, and if you did that, maybe this would happen. And so we're acting in some ways as a guide to help people navigate the complexity of Cornell. We also are concerned about fair process. Occasionally we meet visitors who have an issue which really seems to us to be quite, for some reason or other, unfair. But on the other hand, you also got to remember we're only hearing one side of the story, because we're only hearing what the visitor has to say, which may, of course, be somewhat prejudiced. And so one has to be very careful about that whole idea as to what fairness means. We have we see a majority of staff who are having issues of one sort or another. I tend to see more on the academic side of the house, and I would say I tend to see graduate students who are having problems with their major professor or with their committee and try and help them through that. I see a certain number of undergraduates who are having difficulty in a course, and I often help them think about how you might approach a professor. And I often suggest that pounding on the table and screaming tends to be counterproductive in dealing with faculty. Not always, I suppose, but mostly. And give them some coaching as to how they might proceed. So that's the main thing we do. A couple of other things are important. Occasionally we'll have somebody who really needs to see someone higher up in the administration, whose door might not automatically be open to a student or employee and so on. And we will offer to try and be helpful because we think it's important for one reason or another that they have a conversation. And so we will, with their permission, of course, make a phone call and try and expedite that. And then the final thing that's important is that occasionally we find there are issues that really ought to be brought to somebody's attention in the administration. It's called upward feedback. And it's kind of a difficult thing to know exactly when it makes sense to do that. And it's also difficult to do that because you've got to protect the person that told you whatever. But nonetheless, there are occasions when upward feedback is something we can do. And we do from time to time do that. So that's the general outline of what it is we're all about. And Linda will tell you some details.
Thank you. And I join Charlie in thanking all of you for the invitation to appear before you tonight. There's a couple of handouts. So one is just an agenda of what we're talking about, but we're not strictly following it. But of course, it has a sort of summary of our remarks. And then the other is a form that is entitled Feedback About Ombudsman Services. So these are at the end of the table here. And I guess we have quite a few extras. And then the other thing that we have is our latest swag, which is a combination keychain, whistle, light. If you press it, it lights up. So I know we have the police chief here, safety device, well, the whistle too. And
help me find the keyhole.
And it's also a compass. And the idea with the compass is that's kind of ties into the Ombudsman Office, help with navigation, finding your way around the big red tape. Anyway, the reason I brought it is because we also appreciate that you're, to some extent, ambassadors for us, help spreading the word about our office. And this is an item that when we have resource fairs and so on, that it's our latest swag item that we give to people. Anyway, in terms of our presentation and remarks, I don't want to talk too much because we typically find what's helpful is in the interaction. But I did want to just indicate, so what Charlie said is kind of the summary of how our office works, and most of the time what we're doing is Charlie meeting with typically with academics, and I meet with typically, but we meet with all constituencies, non-academics, and then we kind of sometimes I meet with grad students, sometimes Charlie, and the same thing with undergrads, and sometimes we meet with people together because we're the way our office is set up, which I think is quite helpful, is we have we come from sort of the different sides of the university, academic, non-academic, and in terms of our background, we have kind of different subject matter expertise. So section two here gives you some examples of sort of the types of situations and cases that we see time to time. The one thing that I'll say is some of the examples are kind of concrete, like intellectual property sort of concern about it, and someone's asking for advice about that. Some of these areas are kind of more thorny in nature, and someone might really not be sure exactly sort of what to do about, say, microaggressions, and does this fit in that category? And if it does, you know, what do I want to do about it, and how do I protect myself from retaliation, and so on and so forth. So some of the issues are more thorny in nature, and I'm happy to answer questions about that. So we spend, I'd say, you know, most of our time with visitor issues, and then, as Charlie mentioned, the other aspect of what we do is upward feedback. And we're here, to some extent, to talk about our last annual report, but it is at this point dated because we're halfway through the next year. But what I would like to share is that we're transparent about our annual report. It's on the website, and on section four, some basic information about this past year. Our number of visitors was up a little bit. For the past 10 years, we basically tend to see between 300 and 400 people. One year, it was over 400. We thought it might continue in that vein, but it hasn't. It tends to be in the 300s. And we do everything that we can in terms of outreach and making sure that people know about us and know that our door is open, know that we're passionate about what we do and that we want to meet with people, whether it's a relatively minor issue or a more serious issue. Notwithstanding that, it seems like, you know, in the 300s is the number of people who come to pay a visit. Just in terms of understanding that number, that's the number of visitors. So one visitor might meet with us half a dozen times, but it's still counted as one visitor. And then we also report to you on the constituency and again, the trend of seeing more non-academics versus other constituents has continued over this past year. We kind of break up the reason that people come to see us and set into seven rather broad problem areas. And again, the trend for this past year, which has been fairly consistent, is a lot of people come to see us about difficulties with their employment situation. Even sometimes students come to see us about employment situations because sometimes, of course, students are employed with work study or otherwise. But in terms of students, we teach students on other issues, whether it's grade issues or advising issues, that type of thing. I'd like to, unless there's any questions on the annual report, I think what I'll do is turn to more interesting areas, which is section six of the report. We can be, in terms of Title IX, as Charlie said, one of our tenets is confidentiality. So we're a confidential resource for anything that anyone comes to see us about, whether someone tells us their name or not, or what the situation is. The only exceptions to confidentiality or imminent risk of serious harm are required by law. Like if we were to get a subpoena, we could try to find it. We might not be successful. But that is confidentiality with respect to Title IX matters. And on the SHARE website and all the other information with respect to Title IX, I think that's been made quite clear to faculty and staff and students. A side role that we have is that we again, this has to do with the non-academic side of the house. There's, in terms of the grievance procedure, we do outreach and tell people that they can volunteer to be employee representatives in the grievance process. And And we help with workforce policy and labor relations to train the reps. And then when someone wants to file a grievance, we're the conduit to supplying the person filing the grievance with an employee representative so that they don't have to face that difficult situation without any support. Again, we're an informal resource, so we don't get involved in a formal process aside from explaining what it is and helping someone with an employee rep. The next section is mediation on campus. So those of you who have carried on from last year to this year might recall that last year when Charlie and I came to visit with you, we mentioned that we really thought it would be helpful if there were an enhanced mechanism on campus when we meet with someone and there's a difficulty with another person, say colleague to colleague, that there be an avenue where that person can receive, or those people, I should say, both of them can receive help via mediation. And so we're in the midst of a sort of pilot project, if you will, with ILR's Scheinman Institute. And so the protocol is when we meet with someone and it's a situation where the person that they're in conflict with agrees to it, and they want to engage in mediation, we can refer that matter to the Scheinman Institute, and then the Scheinman professional staff can try to help the person with their difficulty by engaging in mediation. Another matter in terms of our sort of miscellaneous is Cornell Tech and off-campus visitors. So just wanted to bring that up and let you know that so far, Charlie and I feel more or less like we can handle the number of visitors that we see, including visitors in New York City who are part of Cornell Tech or elsewhere. As you know, Cornell has staff and faculty, for that matter, or academics, I should say, outside of Ithaca, whether it's Geneva or Buffalo or Rochester or New York City. And so we offer ourselves as ombudsman to those folks, either using Skype or telephone. And of course, we leave it to the person, whatever they prefer in terms of having a telephone call or a Skype meeting. Again, this came up again from folks who have been here last year. There was an inquiry about feedback about our services. And so the second handout that we've shared with you, it is a feedback form that sits on our website. There's a link on our website that says feedback, and someone can simply download this form should they choose to and enlighten us about how the office visits have gone. So, partly we're sharing this with you tonight because whether it's this evening that you see something that you think doesn't make sense or something that's not on here that you think we should add in terms of feedback, we're all ears and very open to hearing about it. And we're in the midst of making sure that this can also be accessed via Qualtrics. So right now it's a link on the website. I think I'll leave my remarks there and just open it up. Charlie may have some.
I'd like to make one more point.
Sure.
I think people were very worried about Title IX in the Ombudsman Office because they felt that people would come to us and that there would be no follow-up. There would be no report to the appropriate authorities. And what we have found, our experience is that when people come to us, we explain to them what the process is, what it's likely to look like. And then, and it's usually Linda who copes with this, often we're able to take them over to the Title IX office and expedite the reporting. So far from being a dead end where no report comes, I would say 100% of our visitors who have reported a Title IX kind of offense have in fact gone on to report. And I just think that's an important thing for people to understand.
And thank you, Charlie. And I also would add with respect to Title IX, so we're a resource for someone who wants to make a complaint. We're also a resource for a respondent who, you know, might not realize that judicial counselor can advise him or her, or they, or, you know, sort of not have an appreciation for resources. Charlie mentioned this kind of related to the insider outsider. In other words, say someone needs to receive support at CAPS, we have an ability to kind of help with that if the person hasn't gotten in as quickly as they would like. So we're able to, I think, be helpful to both sides of that situation. And it's kind of similar, as Charlie said, in terms of reporting. Sometimes you don't necessarily immediately, a situation that's really difficult, go to the office, and like you might not know exactly what reporting means or who the people are. And so we can sort of help in that respect and describe what it is. It's kind of similar to anything. Say you want to report an ethics impropriety, whether it's financial or otherwise. Sometimes you want a safe place to go to talk about it before you actually make that report or do what you need to do.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Concerns, thoughts?
So if you have a question, please raise your hand or placard. Right now I have Dale, T, and then Joe. Before we get started, I also want to take a minute to actually congratulate Charlie. I heard you were honored last week at an event in Washington, D.C., so I wanted to congratulate you on behalf of the Assembly for that.
Well, thank you.
And I also wanted to, just for those members who are new, just reiterate that the Ombudsman provides a really, in my estimation, quite an essential service. They've just talked about, and they are something in the Assembly. We've worked with them closely over many years, and they're not necessarily the highest profile office on campus. Their service, and they work quietly in the background, and I think they really do an excellent job helping people navigate the administrative intricacies of Cornell, and as I said, we're always happy to work with them. So actually, I will exercise the prerogative and ask, is there anything that this Assembly can do for you to help advocate, whether you need more staff, more funding, or just with the new administration and everything coming through, is there anything that this Assembly can do to help you in your important work?
Well, gosh,
thank you.
I thank you for that. I think you were helpful last year when we asked, you know, about the idea of mediation, and then we've had some follow through with that. So we I think right now really respect your candor and your recommendations and thoughts.
Right. Well, please let us know if anything comes to mind that we could assist you with. I have Dale first in the speakers list.
Yeah, thank you for coming today. I do want to start by saying that I really appreciate the fact that your office treats everyone equally in terms of students, faculty, employees. There are very few institutions on campus that you walk in, you'll get the same type of help and the same type of support and the same rights, and I think that's brilliant. What I did want to ask, you talked about how confidentiality is only violated in the case of legal issues or imminent risk to the individual. How does the office decide imminent risk? Is it the individual that's working on that case, or do the three of you come together and make that determination?
So I appreciate the question. So the standard of confidentiality and the exceptions are in our field. It's not just sort of a Cornell thing, but in terms of it's in the ethical principles of the International Ombudsman Association. So in terms of imminent risk, say I felt that, or Charlie, or both of us felt that someone was going to harm themselves or someone else, or that we needed in some way to, I'll just say, breach confidentiality. What we do is try to do everything we can to engage the person, and that's kind of the last resort. So in other words, say someone were in the office and suffering in such a way that, you know, my standard kind of is, can I sleep at night without doing something? So I would do everything in my power to engage the person and see if I could go with them to Cornell Health and sit with them before a counselor came in, to allow them to make a call or for them to make a call in the office. So it's a situation where if none of those things work and we really feel like the person's going to be a harm to themselves or someone else, that would happen. And so in terms of who decides, well, it has to be an ombudsman decision because we're the ones who have sort of heard it. And
I suppose more the question, would it be an individual ombudsman that ever made the decision, or would it usually be two or three of you who make that decision together?
Well, there's just two of us.
Okay.
So yeah, so we would talk to one another about a situation like that.
I would say usually, mm-hmm. though There certainly have been cases where I felt there was a substantial risk, and I persuaded the visitor to take the appropriate action of notifying the university, either by going to KZ and her outfit or elsewhere in the university to report it. And I made sure that that report happened. That is, I followed up with the visitor afterwards and said, did you go and do it? And so that was a decision I made. I didn't even discuss it with Linda until afterwards, but I felt that that was sufficient to take care of that particular kind of problem.
Can I also comment on that? So you have the clearly not an imminent risk, and you have the clearly imminent risk categories. I don't think that's what we're talking about. We're talking about that funny in between, what's a risk to one person may not be a risk to another person, and how are those decisions made. My experience with the ombudsman's office is if there's any hesitation that they have internal resources either through their own group. So if they're trying to figure that out, the ombudsman's group itself, have you had a similar type case? You know, what have you guys done? There are resources if there are time for those resources. If it feels more imminent, as Charlie was saying, I might get a call that says, that doesn't actually blow the confidentiality. It just says, if I've got a situation like this, would you have concerns? Here are some of the exact words that the person's using. Here are some of the behaviors we've noticed. And I might not know gender identity. I might not know class. I might not know staff, student, or faculty. We just talk about a person who's struggling. And does that rise to the level of, you know, really having to go through? And then generally speaking, it goes back to them, and they've got a great rapport with whoever they're working with, and it goes from that point on. I cannot remember a time working with you two at all that we have raised anything to the level of violating confidentiality. I've never known. So if that gives some general support to how well they work within their own system and keeping things confidential and working with the individual to make good decisions for themselves and for the safety of the campus, I think it's got a tremendous balance.
Thank you. And I think that reminds me, related to the question, another resource is CCI, which is part of CAPS, Cornell Health. So again, I can say this is what I've done, not giving the name or anything else. What more, you know, might you advise me to do? Does, you know, our priority, of course, is the person's safety. We also prioritize confidentiality. And I think Charlie and I appreciate that if we don't take confidentiality absolutely critically serious, you know, as then we ought not be in office. It's really, in large part, what distinguishes what we do from many of the other excellent health and offices.
Thank you. Next on the speaker list is T.
Amongst the seven problem areas, one of them is human rights. And you mentioned issues of microaggressions that might come to your office. And so I was just wondering how often such issues are raised by people of racial, religious, or sexual identity, minority backgrounds, and is there a point person in your office to deal with those issues, or like you were saying, like to kind of facilitate a conversation that is comfortable for the individual that this is happening to? So is there a point person for those issues?
There's kind of two parts to the question. So the first part is sort of how often, and then how we deal with it. Is there a point person? So we have numbers for the past 8 years in the annual report. And so this past reporting year, there were in the human rights section, there were 20 situations that would fit into that category, which actually, frankly, is the highest that it's been. It's ranged from 6 to 20 over the past 8 years. So that's just sort of basic numbers. And then in terms of sort of how we handle it and is there a point person, so we are the point people. There's two ombudsmen, And if someone comes to visit us about a bias incident, whether it fits into policy 6.4, it's an issue of discrimination, or it's a bias incident that would be reported to through the protocol and the bias report matter, or someone wanting to just figure out the options and so on. What our function is to figure out what the person who's meeting with us, what his or her, their goals are, and to make sure that the individual knows what the different resources are for support, for reporting. We might, you know, sort of articulate that and then get together again with the person as they kind of think about it. They might want us to be an intermediary to some type of reporting office. Sometimes, and the annual report speaks to this, often when people see us, there's sort of intersecting issues. So there might be an employment issue, concern, conflict, problem, and there also might be something that fits into the category of bias or microaggression, and the two might be interrelated. And so the person also might want to be talking to us about, and again, this all relates to confidentiality. Are they planning to stay in this unit? And when might they want to report it? And how is it affecting them? And so it's a complicated conversation. But again, what we're always trying to help with is what is the person's goal and what are they looking for?
I think the biggest issue I can think of is that I don't necessarily see everyone feeling comfortable sharing, like everyone specifically from minority backgrounds, feeling comfortable sharing information like that or opening up about information like that when they don't see themselves represented kind of in the ombudsman, or like are unsure of maybe your experience with those kinds of issues.
Right.
And obviously, like, this is not you know, to undermine you and what you do, but are there any kind of plans on expanding and having that kind of representation to make people feel more comfortable like reporting those issues?
Well, I appreciated the question in the beginning about resources, and I think you're exactly right. I mean, I think that it is more comfortable if there was a situation such as you're suggesting, and regardless of whether, I mean, I think it's a priority of our office, but that doesn't change the very important feedback that you're providing. And so I think it's something we should think about more.
Thank you.
I guess I did think about it a lot with our employee reps, but that doesn't speak to the student experience. And so when we did our recent outreach, we were very mindful of diversifying that group, and I think that has been successful. But it doesn't speak to the two offices, but I hear you.
Thank you. Next on the speaker's list is Joe.
So I have a question relating to the problem area of academic actions, kind of specific to like a lot of students. Many times I've had situations where students were like, well, my computer broke down and I couldn't get my assignment in until like the next day when I got my computer fixed or something like that. And many times it comes into this miscommunication of, you know, students up many times saying, I didn't deserve the grade I got from my faculty member because my faculty, like, and I explained the situation, but my faculty member is being unreasonable. And like, that is something we see time and time again. From your experience with kind of relating in general faculty and undergraduate student, like kind of conflicts like that, what do you see is the best ways that you've all handled it? Or is there mostly a mutual success for both parties in those cases? How do those cases kind of obviously, you can't generalize all of them because there are probably so many, but overall, do you see that both parties are satisfied with the outcome to the best of the ability that you can?
Yeah, it's a tough one. I mean, it's the dog ate my homework. And I think I always tell students that Cornell faculty are wonderful. but some are more wonderful than others. And that it's really a question of trying to make your case in a reasonable way to the faculty member. And sometimes you're going to win, and other times you're going to lose. And but to give it your best shot, you know, think about how you're going to present the issue. And I see a lot of students who have such a complicated, involved story that it takes them kind of half an hour to explain it to me. And so I suggest they, you know, make a list of, you know, what are the main points here, and try and help them make a better case to the faculty member. And the answer is, the results are, you'll be astonished to hear, mixed. Some win, some lose. But, you know, it's the faculty that are in charge of the grades, and nobody is going to tell them what to do about that. The other thing that I suggest sometimes is that they have a conversation with their advisor. And sometimes the advisor can be an ally in talking with another faculty member. It all depends on the situation and the circumstances. But we try to puzzle out, you know, what might be an appropriate way to go. And again, as I say, some work and some don't. But that's life.
Thank you. Next on the speaker list is Richard.
So I was listening carefully when you talked about workload. I have two questions. One is, what proportion of your business is coming from Cornell Tech? Because you mentioned that in passing, and how does that work? The second is, you pointed out that the number of visits per visitor varies quite a bit. So some visitors have many visits, and some are just one and out. I was thinking about this, that multiple visits are, or could be, seen as problem areas in which there are sticky issues, not just processing issues, but issues of fit between what it, so I'd like to know which of these categories have the most average visits per visitor, and how you would interpret that.
You're turning to me. Well, in terms of, so we don't actually keep numbers on either Cornell Tech or the number of visits, but I do know, you know, doing this work for 10 years, sort of, I do have a sense of it. So, well, Cornell Tech hasn't been 10 years, but in terms of Cornell Tech, I'd say it's less than a dozen. We have met with some sort of higher ups at Cornell Tech to make sure that they're aware that we're a resource. We've offered to go down there. We have changed our bulk email to make it more inviting and make sure that people who are not in Ithaca know that we're a resource for them. So, but right now we're not getting, you know, huge numbers with respect to Cornell Tech. In terms of sort of the multiple visits, in general, the multiple visits are employment situations. I'd say that's more non-academic staff that say someone who's facing discipline and conflicts related to that, and their standing at Cornell is called into question, fear that there's a chance they're in a performance improvement plan. There's a real chance that, or likelihood that they may be losing their job. And so they need support in navigating that, figuring out their next move, that kind of thing. Those tend to be the situations of those large number of visits, but it could be anything.
I get several visits from students often, because I will have, outlined a couple of possibilities. and they'll have gone off and tried one or two of them and then come back and said, you know, that didn't work. Any more thoughts? And so you try and think of other things that they might do. And so that's where I usually get multiple visits. And I would say it's more typical of undergraduates or graduate students who are trying to navigate kind of complicated academic situations.
Advising situations.
Advising situations. And they typically don't have a faculty advisor that's being very helpful for one reason or another. And they're kind of at a loss for somebody to talk to, I think. That answer to your question?
Yes, I mean, in both cases, I mean, the employment point, that suggests that there's might be another way of arranging things to take some of that load off of you and put it into management. But the advising thing, I think that's right. I mean, it's, I'm director of undergraduate studies, government department. And so I know there are good advisors and there are bad advisors. And I know that in many cases I end up being the advisor because by default. And when you're looking at this thing, I mean, that's a problem. There's nothing really you can do about it, except that at some point, if you see departments or colleges or somewhere where that problem is more serious, that might be one of the things that you send up.
Thank you. Next to the speakers list is Joe, and then I have Logan.
Yeah, kind of tying to Richard's question, as he was saying, the question sparked my mind. If you see, for example, multiple visitors come in and there's a similar individual or the same individual who is causing some sort of the reason why the visitors came in. So say, for example, there is four student employees, five student employees, whatever came in and they all complained about their supervisor that they have, or it's three different students all complaining about a faculty member, a specific member and some whatever. Do you send, what does that process look like if you say, well, this has happened yearly too many times, or this individual has been in the thick of similar situations across the board or something like that? Do you keep track of that? How do you ameliorate those concerns potentially? What does it look like from your end?
Who wants to take it? So typically we meet with people one-on-one. We do on occasion have groups of students or a group of employees that will meet with us. And in those situations, often it's involving a difficulty with another individual. There's a tension between providing the type of, I'll just say upward feedback that you're talking about and confidentiality. And I would say we err on confidentiality because even if we're talking more of a trend or problem area, there can be assumptions made about who made the complaint and so on. So I'd say our function is more with upward feedback, talking more with respect to trends that a certain area is a problem area as opposed to a person. And we're trying to get meeting with the group of individuals or individual and coaching them in terms of what their options are or figuring out how they might be doing able to do something that is, you know, always there's a calculation, but is not gonna cause any retaliation. And each of those situations is actually incredibly different because, we have been at the university a long time, and so then we tend to know who the people are in a position of authority and who can be trusted with some limited information. And so we kind of look at it in a very careful way, but erring on the side of confidentiality. And of course, it also depends what the people we're meeting with want, and so we need to be mindful of that.
Anything you'd add to that, Jerry?
No, I think that's exactly right.
Thank you. Next, Ms. Prigos, is Logan.
Sure. Hello. So it was mentioned that your office will sometimes follow up with individuals to confirm that they've reported. I was wondering if there are other instances where you will follow up with an individual after the fact, maybe for something that is not necessarily a danger, but if they waive that confidentiality, is there an ability where you guys will opt to reach out to individuals?
So when someone waives confidentiality, we can reach out, say, you know, say there's a really challenging, thorny situation, and the employee may even not like totally get exactly what all the moving parts are, mm-hmm. and want us kind of on their behalf to call human resources and get information. So we will do that on occasion, confidentiality waived. And we're then we're really clear about exactly what we're asking and that we're not going to provide any other information and that kind of thing. We do that if we really think it's going to be helpful, but often we think more coaching the person to get the information would mm-hmm. be helpful. But we do on occasion do it to answer your question. We do go to meetings sometimes as a neutral observer if we think it's going to, with everyone's permission to be there, if we think it's going to be helpful to everyone at the meeting. And then I'm not sure if this was part of your question, but we also do check in on the individual who we've met with if we're worried.
That was the crux of my question.
Yeah, about how they're doing. Okay. You know, so yes. Say, often. You know, say wonderful. It's a freshman who's struggling and came with such and such, and we didn't hear back from that person, but we might reach out and just say, just thinking of you, wondered if you know how you're, that kind of thing.
And then another quick question. If an individual does waive confidentiality and it's a Title IX 6.4 type complaint, will your office then contact Title IX if the individual doesn't want to be in a confidential setting or would ask you to do it on their behalf?
Well, that's not what we want to do. That's not really the right role. I guess, would we ever, if there's no other circumstance, if the person waived confidentiality? I mean, I guess it's possible, but that's never happened. It's never had to happen. We've more been the conduit to helping that person help themselves with respect to that office, whether it's walking with them there or mm-hmm. meeting with them several times, going over the policy, what's likely to happen, you know, that kind of thing.
Okay. And then do you keep a number for the amount of visits total that you have outside of just one individual that might meet multiple times being counted once?
No.
No, the office used to do it that way and before our time, and we thought it was more meaningful to know the number of people coming, but of course if we hear from this body that would be helpful, we're happy to look, you know, to do that. So.
Thank you.
Excellent. Let's bring this to Ashburn.
This question might have been answered before. I'm just curious. So confidentiality goes up to being a threat on campus or something along that line. Is that only for physical safety threats, or does that also go towards, say in like Joe's example, if it's like a recurrent issue to multiple students, like threat of fairness or threat of some other type of issue, that you would break confidentiality for that?
Well, I think, should I take it?
Yeah, go ahead.
So in terms of sort of fairness of a process, that would be a trend and something that we could likely share, you know, that suggesting a policy might be changed without doing something identifiable. So the imminent risk of serious harm really relates to physical harm to self or others is really what we think about.
Thank you. That exhausts my figures. Actually, I'm on it.
I was just curious, within the process, is there a place for advocacy for anyone who comes? So you provide a resource, you provide, you know, opportunities to be a guide, you know, to whoever comes to the office. But at any point, is there a place for advocacy? Or is that something after someone doesn't feel satisfied, then they have to go out and find someone to help advocate if they're not, I guess if they're not satisfied, you know, because there may be situations where the person who they have concerns about is in a high position and could be a little intimidated. And so they may have trouble speaking for themselves. So is there a place for that within the process?
Yes, is the answer to that question. And it comes in a couple of forms. There have been occasions where somebody came to me with what I felt was a very serious academic problem, and they, in my opinion, needed to go talk to the dean of the college. And they gave me permission to call and tell the dean that they were going to call, and in my opinion, I thought that would be a worthwhile meeting. And so that's kind of opening the door. And but it was an agreement with the person that came and visited. And it was a judgment on my part, of course, as to that was a reasonable thing to do. And so I think the answer to your question is yes, we do that kind of thing from time to time, particularly when somebody is, in our opinion, not being treated fairly for one reason or another, somewhere in the university, we can open the door to a more senior person in that chain of command, and it isn't that we're advocating for the person necessarily. We're simply saying that there's a story here that we've heard that concerns us, and we think that you, more superior, ought to hear it firsthand. Because, of course, we can't judge, you know, whether it's true or not, or the circumstances, but still, we can open the door, and we do that.
And in a quick way of sort of putting it is getting back to our tenets. So we're neutral, but that doesn't mean that we aren't about a fair process, and we're not neutral about being about a fair process if someone's not being treated fairly, meaning the process that Cornell says is supposed to happen isn't happening.
Thank you. Next, I have Rena and then Linda.
Hi. Thanks. I was just wondering if you could like maybe give us a little bit more details on your mediation pilot project. You know, in terms of like, you know, you're partnering with Scheinman, but what kind of a role do you play there? What kind of cases have presented itself that has led to mediation so far? And like, how has that gone?
So it's pretty early in the referral process. There's been several cases. They've both, I'll say, an employment nature, conflicts between people in a department, they've been referred for mediation on the part of the staff at Scheinman.
However much details you could share, probably.
Yeah, so I mean, I can't talk about the situations, obviously. I think that we're not sure how, you know, sort of what the resources are and what the numbers will be and what direction this will go. And we take very seriously what Matthew said at the beginning of this session in terms of should we be back. So it's actually, it would be premature for us to say, oh, this is going to settle in this way that the Scheinman Institute has the resources and that we're not sending so many people such that they can't handle it. Right now, we just don't know. So right now we've been able to handle it such that we refer it and they've been able to handle it, but as the year progresses, there may be more situations and there may be a resource issue. I don't know right now. And just in terms of sort of the protocol, so basically, if we meet with someone and we figure out this is a case that's kind of ripe for mediation, our assessment, then we would, with the person's permission,
Again, they've waived confidentiality, allow us to contact the Scheinman Institute and say we'd like to make this referral, and then they kind of take it from there. It's so far what the protocol's been. And I'm not doing the mediations, but I am a mediator, and so I have the ability to kind of assess if this is kind of a case that's ripe for mediation. I do mediate at our local community mediation center, CDRC.
Thank you. Last and speaker list, I have Linda.
Yeah, I'm sorry I missed your presentation, but I have a question that
sure.
I don't know that you covered. So you mentioned that occasionally you get a case where you feel like the person perhaps may have been treated unfairly. And I'm wondering, you know, I'm imagining that's a portion of your cases. Is there anything that those cases have in common? Is there anything that could be done to address the unfairness that that individual faced? And you understand my question.
Yeah, I mean, I think if there's a trend that you know, such and such investigations, grievances, you know, that the person's kind of cut off and not able to tell their side, and that's a trend, that would be something that would be involve upward feedback.
So is there any chance that at the end of the year, you could think back on those cases, maybe there's three or four, mm-hmm. and if you have any recommendations going forward, like in other words, this person was treated unfairly because there was no process for them to file a grievance. I mean, I know of a particular case, and so I'm just wondering, is there anything we can do to advance the conversation to make things more fair when you actually encounter these couple cases that are unfair? How do we respond, you know, since we're supposed to be sort of looking over all of your work? Is there a way forward? Is there something we could do that would make the process better? Is there? I don't know.
So our protocol has been to go to wherever the problem area is, for one of us to go to the person who's in a position of authority and ask them to take action. So are you saying perhaps we could have the UA involved in that? Is that kind of where you're?
Well, I'm just wondering, you know, because you obviously encounter this, you know, this insufficiency. Mm-hmm. So if you could at least call our attention to when there is one, perhaps, you know, I'm not sure that that's, if there's enough of generality in this, or if these are very specific personal, you know, I just don't know.
In general, I can say that the ones that I've dealt with have been very, very individual kind of circumstances. Mm-hmm. And were we to find that Department X or mm-hmm. Office X is causing difficulty of one sort or another, that is the kind of thing that would motivate us to provide upward feedback. But one of the real problems in doing that is that you have to protect the person that told you about this. And so it becomes somewhat tricky mm-hmm. to figure out exactly how to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And what we've had more success with, I would say, is opening the door to the person who has the complaint and difficulty to a higher up in that chain of command. And I must say that I have been impressed over the years that I've been doing this with the extraordinary willingness of everybody in the university to be responsive when we make that kind of request. It's really been quite remarkable to me.
Well, anyway, I just threw that out there in case you do encounter, you know, something where you feel like there isn't an avenue forward for a particular kind of situation. That would be the kind of thing that would be great to know.
So the example, like from the year of this annual report, had to do with holding exams or projects or other academic endeavors.
Mm-hmm.
on days where there's a holiday. And so, but in those particular situations, there wasn't a will for us to kind of do anything more specific with those pockets of problems. But there, you know, there were emails, and we are thankful that went out to, you know, general emails to faculty reminding them of their duties and so on and so forth, which I think is very helpful and also sets a tone and expectations and so on.
Thank you very much. Please join me in thanking Charlie and Linda for their time and their general service to the community.
I would like to end by saying thank you all for your support. It really makes a big difference, and thank you.
And I thank you as well. And I so look forward to the resolution. PZ has been such a great community partner to our office. We're just incredibly grateful. Thank you for recognizing us.
For those who may have joined us late, we acquired quorum a few minutes after we started the meeting. We had not yet approved the minutes. However, because Chief Zoner has been patiently waiting, I would ask, is any dissent to going out of order and jumping right to a resolution? Seeing no dissent, we will move directly into UA Resolution 2, expressing appreciation and best wishes for CUPD Chief Kathy Zoner. So I have Dale, something you wanted to raise, or speakers list?
Speakers list.
Okay. So this resolution is entirely sponsored by me as the chair of the assembly. It's meant to be a consensus resolution on behalf of the entire assembly, primarily thanking Chief Zoner for her many years of service to Cornell. I've had the pleasure of knowing her and working with her since I joined the assembly in 2013. And it's been hard to believe it's been that long, but it's truly been an honor and pleasure working with you these past couple of years. The resolution is built, iterates and lists her achievements. I had a hard time finding a role you didn't hold at the police department. And it also notes that she's been in the assembly numerous times. There is a quick amendment because we actually were trying to figure out exactly how long you served on the CJC. It turns out it's actually over 17 years.
Yep.
We actually had someone go back. We actually had we were kind of the office of the assembly go back through the minutes and found that you first started working with the CJC in early 2002. Which is roughly 17 years ago.
Yeah, that seems about right.
So.
Feels like a lot longer.
But in general, we are very sorry to see you go, but we figured I wanted to bring this forward on behalf of the assembly because I think it's the very least we can do to thank you for the time and effort you can put into serving the Cornell community. So obviously, I have Dale on the speaker list, but being that this is about you, is there anything you'd like to say or add? Please.
Oh, no,
yours.
I'd like Dale to go first.
Okay. Well, in that case, Dale,
just a couple of quick amendments. Yes. On line 14, unless I'm misunderstanding it, I'm going to move to have it read first female chief of police.
You got it. That's
unless the position female chief of police is a specific position.
No, that's right. It's first.
Not yet.
And then I think in line 37, I move to replace her with Chief Kathy Zoner. I feel for the formality of the resolve clause, it doesn't make sense to be going with the pronoun there. That was it. Yeah, so line 14, change it to read the department's first female chief of police in 2009. And line 37, change it to read resolve the members of the university assembly wish Chief Kathy Zoner the very best of luck as she starts her new position.
Dale, do you want my piggyback? Line 27, and remove the bracketed portion and replace it with 17.
Did you get that on line 27?
It's right.
Okay. Replace the waiting on the office assemblies for exact number with the number 17.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
There we go. Okay. There's a motion to amend. Second. There's a second. Is there any dissent to this amendment? Any concerns regarding it? Of course.
No, I just want to thank everybody. I have to look around the room and I'm like, okay, I think I am the longest standing member of some faction of the University Assembly through Codes and Judicial Committee on Forward. I've seen a lot of faces pass through all the different assemblies from time to time. I've worked with many different people on the Codes and Judicial Committee and learned a lot from all of that. I would have to say it's one of my primary developers of me and getting that exposure. So I thank you for the opportunities for that. I, as much as I find Robert's Rules of Order very difficult to get anything done in, I appreciate that people are still engaging in that formality of that type of governance that, that respects everybody's opportunities and brings things forward in a way that's kind of as equal as you can get it. If you can get to the table, then you're equalized. I guess that's the harder part, is getting to the table. And I appreciate that this assembly has a lot of different subcommittees that that allows for more space to be given to those voices. So I've always appreciated the work that the University Assembly has done, and appreciate the recognition. Thanks.
Thank you very much. With that, is there anyone else anything like to add concerning this resolution? I consider the amendments adopted. There was no dissent to them.
Can I make a final note after?
Absolutely. So the amendments were adopted. We're back in the general discussion. I have Dale.
I just want to say that you've been a wonderful voice of reason and sanity on the Code and Judicial Committee, which is sometimes necessary. And we're going to have a hard time functioning without you.
Well, hearing that, I have no speakers list. It's my honor and privilege to put the question. All those in favor of this amendment, or sorry, this resolution, please raise your hand or placard. All those who are opposed, all those who like to abstain, I will note that for the record the chair votes in favor. And I'm happy to say by a vote of 13-0, this resolution carries unanimously. Please join me in congratulating Chief Dawn. I think I can speak on the entire assembly, and actually I can because it's passed the resolution. It's been a true honor and privilege working with you over these past couple of years. I know you're not leaving quite yet, but really it's been an honor, and we're incredibly sorry to see you go, but we think it's exciting, it's a great opportunity for moving forward. So thank you so much.
Thank you. And I'm not leaving the area. I am officially retiring from Cornell. I'm working from home, and the Becker House has graciously allowed me to stay on as a House Fellow. So I'll continue my engagement through them. And I'm trying to negotiate a deal with the Meineck Executive Scholars, because I've got a group there, and we're going to finish the semester for sure, because we got a bowling trophy to hang on to. So I will continue to, I'm sure, be connected to the campus in some way, shape, or form. Blissfully uniform free.
Well, there we are. At the very least, we'll have to find some way to play the Kathy's Owner song one more time.
That's true. I can say that you'd also, you know, there aren't many police chiefs that I know that have a electronic music dedication from a Valentine's Day wish of a Cornell student. So,
thank you so much.
Thanks, you guys.
Absolutely. Moving back into our regular agenda, we actually will go back to approval of minutes, which is much, much, much more bland compared to the saying thank you, but needs to get done. We have the minutes from our January 29th meeting. Are there any questions, comments, or concerns with the minutes as they're in your packet? Hearing none, is there any dissent to approving the minutes as presented? Hearing no dissent, the minutes of the 29th are approved. I bring this into Assembly Committee and Liaison Reports. As we have not actually met since the 29th. Are there any updates from the Grad Professional Student Assembly, Faculty Senate, or Employee Assembly that any members would like to raise? I see the Student Assembly members.
Oh, okay. Jump. I remember it. It took me a hot minute. We have our elections coming up in March, which is like shockingly really close. That we'll come back from February break, we'll be thrown into it. So basically for the month of March, we'll be engrossed in the Student Assembly elections, in addition to all the other work that the Student Assembly does with the current members.
And the undergraduate student elected trustee election.
And the undergraduate student elected trustee election. So we're pulling double duty in March. So it's going to be great. Check out the Sun for fun coverage. Let's see what a chat. Oh, the Student Health Advisory Committee, a coalition, they changed their name, is being formed under Cornell Health in order to afford students the ability to interact more with Cornell Health administrators, more Cornell Health medical professionals, in order to improve the quality of health that students are receiving. This is really a fantastic formalization of a relationship that's happened. We're so grateful that Rena is going to co-chair it from the graduate professional student side. So we're slowly trying to get more graduate professional students involved in that as well. So that's gonna be great. The Student Assembly, also more concerning to now the Faculty Senate, passed a resolution looking at how media and grade reporting has looked at since the university, since the Faculty Senate got rid of the big transparent one in 2011, and to see if like that has actually affected how that's affected course enrollment, grades in those classes, to see what happens. Whatever we passed it, you should be getting it soon.
I believe the EPC discussed that yesterday.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
And then anything else of note? If any, for people who might be concerned or have students that come in contact with them about food insecurity on campus, Annabelle's Grocery, which was a student-run grocery store located in Annabelle Taylor Hall, has stopped operations for the spring semester in order to refocus themselves going into the next year. So they're not a resource available. However, there is a food pantry that just recently came into that space. So that space is still for students who might be food insecure, just to refer them to that area. It's really great food. I've heard really great reviews of the food in that food pantry location. So that's also something else. Yeah.
I don't know if I talk about the CU swipes.
Oh, Swipe Out Hunger. Yeah, so this was a fantastic initiative that was championed through the Dean of Students Office, where essentially students could donate their guest swipes on their meal plans into a general bank. And then if you also have students who, students could then request those guest swipes through the Dean of Students, Director of First Generation Low-Income Students, Director of Student Empowerment. Her office, her name is Shakima Clancy. She's located in 626 Thurston, but you can go to the website and basically request a meal swipe to be added to your meal plan from that central bank from Swipe Out Hunger. So another great resource for students experiencing food insecurity if students come to you or stuff like that, yeah.
Thank you, Joe. Any other questions? Actually, T?
Is that only for students that already have meal plans?
I don't believe so, no. The only way you can donate is for students. Actually, you can pay a cash equivalent, but...
Oh, no, I mean, like, receiving...
Oh, no, you don't need a you don't necessarily need a meal plan, but, I mean, you do. You need, like, your card to be activated with Cornell Dining. So, like, yes, but, like, you don't need a 10-meal-a-week, like, thing to use it on. Everyone has at least had a meal plan once through it, so you should be fine.
Thank you. Ashwin?
I don't know if this is true or not, but is it expanding to BRBs too, or no?
There, it's still in its pilot session right now, so depending on how well it goes, I don't know any plans about the BRBs, but it's still in, like, it's not even a full-fledged program yet, it's still piloting out.
Thank you. Other questions for Joe? Hearing none, anything else from our other sister assemblies? Hearing none, moving on to committee reports. Any updates from the CIC? Actually, the CIC was met earlier today, but any updates from the CIC, CWC, CJC, or the Executive Committee?
Well,
Linda?
Yeah, so we just met, that's why I wasn't here. We're hosting Bill McKibben on, I think, March 13th at 7, and we're still trying to figure out the venue, but it looks like it's going to be called Auditorium. He's going to talk about the Middlebury story. They reverse course on their divestment, and so he's going to talk about what happened to make them change their mind. So it should be a very good event. And we also met with the department, the parking person, the guy who's in charge of parking on campus, and talked about doing some incentives for electric vehicles, trying to get some shuttle buses going, lots of interesting things that are more long term. So that was our meeting today.
Thank you. Any questions for Linda? Hearing none, Dale.
The Coastal Judicial Committee will be meeting tomorrow. We are going to finalize the questions for the Spring 2019 University Hearing and Review Board applications, which should go out early March and will be due at the beginning of spring break for undergraduate students, graduate students, and staff members. And we are going to start proposing informally individual amendments from our reorganized code for the University Assembly to begin discussion on before we bring the full reorganized draft to the Assembly, which will hopefully happen before spring break.
Any questions for Dale? Hearing none, and noting our time, we'll briefly on the liaison reports. Are there any updates from our various liaisons to various other campus bodies? Hearing none, that leads us to our last item, which is an executive session. Given that, I would ask that Terrell stop the recording, turn off.
Could you state the topic of the executive session?
The executive session is to discuss matters of confidence to the Assembly. So with that, I'll ask Terrell to stop the recording, stop the minutes, stop the recording, and shut off the video and audio recording, and actually step out for a minute. But we similar, as you may know, we appoint the judicial administrator as well. Actually, is the recording still going? If you wouldn't mind just cutting it off, then I'll get up into this. We'll take more than a few minutes.